Hey, it's Doug Gottlieb, and welcome into the All Ball Podcast. Man, do we have very little to talk about. Kidding. You got college hoops on, got mostly college hoops on the docket today. I will only start with this in terms of LeBron James. You're like, wait, it's March Madness. I want your picks. I want to know who do you like to win it, who should get in the tournament, coaches, and who should replace different coaches. I'll get to that in a second. I just want to give you one little tidbit here on this Rick Bucher story that Jeannie Buss at least contemplated and called in Rich Paul and said, hey, we might trade LeBron James. Now, look, it's a veiled threat. It's a flimsy threat, to be honest with you. She's not trading LeBron James. It's really hard to trade a guy who you just moved out to California. Will you trade him to the Clippers or the Knicks? That's probably the only two possible destinations. But I guess maybe, just maybe, maybe. The Celtics, but, you know, you're talking very, very limited. And what do you say to your season ticket holders? What do you say to your TV network if you part ways with the guy that you sold all your advertisement around? That would be just super uncomfortable. It's only your first year. But it points to this. All of those leaked stories. Remember, first it was leaked out that LeBron could be playing if, you know, despite injury, if it was a playoff run. Then there was the leaked story from Jackie McMullen that he wanted a different coach. Then there was all the leaks with the Anthony Davis deal. And what I thought it was then, and I believe this proves it, it was a coup d'etat. It was Rich Paul and LeBron James trying to own the Lakers. They've always said they want to own an NBA team. That's great. That NBA team is not actually for sale. Not even close to being for sale. And that's what Jeannie Buss did. She just said, hey, we're going to shoot down this coup. Now, the question becomes, does she honestly know how to do it? Right? Does she know how to do it? Because if she allows them to trade for Anthony Davis, and then they hire Ty Lue, or they hire somebody repped by Rich Paul, what has she done? She's had a threat, but hasn't stood by that threat. Instead, they've still kind of taken over her franchise and run it their way. It's a disaster. LeBron is part of the reason, a good portion of the reason that it's a disaster. And Jeannie is struggling to maintain some level of control over her dad's, late father's, proud franchise. I think ultimately it's a super smart move, but it's only made to actually work if they don't trade for Anthony Davis and they don't hire a Rich Paul client or a LeBron James buddy to be the next head coach of the Lakers, or maybe not make a head coaching change at all. But I think there's probably one in the offing. Let's get to college hoops. So Selection Sunday is upon us. I've decided to give you just a couple of stories that I think are pretty awesome. First, Selection Sunday. No one ever gets to actually see how it works. And having been on that set for, 4 years? I can tell you that's pretty awesome. To be the first one to lay your eyes on the bracket. And know you, nanny, nanny, poo, boo, I got something you don't have. Like, that was pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. Especially for a guy who grew up watching the brackets be unveiled. I would say that I don't love the way CBS has chosen to go back in time, back to the way that we did it for the most part when I was there. 1 year, obviously, we tried what was a pretty ill-fated idea of how to unveil the brackets, right? Where we had a 2-hour show, and we would do the old show, and then like a segment with Charles and Kenny and Seth Davis, and it was kind of a mishmash, and there wasn't a lot of hoop being told there, and people wanted their brackets. Look, this is not hard. The old format works, but you just don't have to do it so tight. It's just kind of a classic overreaction to the TV guys like a Richard Deitch. I want the brackets and I want them now. Why? So you'll change the channel? No. We have you as a captivated audience. And by the way, we have really, really good experts. And if your experts are really good, then, you know, all we would get when I was there, and that's all they'll get this year, is 15 seconds to give a thought. One analyst gives one thought on each game. That's it. And then we come back around and say some fairly generic stuff, and they interview some coaches, and they show some shots. But why would you give every game only 15 seconds? Look, I'll be doing a show on Stadium Sports where we'll break down every game. And, of course, all the other networks, so I'll break down games. But why are we doing a show where you only have 15 seconds to talk about each basketball game? That doesn't make any sense. All of these games are worthy of discussion. Tell me about the players and the styles and who do you think is going to win and why. It's going to be up-tempo games, a team zone. Who's a player on one of the underdog teams that I need to get to know? You don't have any of that when all you have is 15 seconds. So congratulations, TV guy. You've made it kind of lame. So congratulations, TV guy, right? Like all these idiots on Twitter and TV people, like I promise you, if I was in charge, even if you had an hour and a half show, whatever, you just need to carve out time to talk about each game, to talk about each team. Like Clark and Seth and all those guys, they're perfectly capable of breaking down each game. And I just always felt like there's games that just get glossed over. And then you give up that opportunity to every other network. When you're at CBS, like, look, hold on to each bracket. It's fine. Give it, show a bracket, go through each game, talk about each game, and then go to the next bracket. But you don't have to have 15 seconds for each game. It's just too tight. Especially when you can make a lot more money off it if you're CBS coming out of that Big Ten championship game. But I don't work there anymore, so they can. They want to do it that way, it's fine. That way still works, and people will still watch. I just think it's a better way. And you can give a more informed viewer, and you can also say things that are sometimes more right and sometimes more wrong. Right? Bigger predictions, more players to talk about, more coaches to talk about, more outstanding stories. Instead, it kind of gets lost because you just don't have the time. Why don't you have the time? You're the one who sets the time when you're CBS. You have the bracket. Hold on to it. And by the way, I would reveal all the other brackets and then put the bubble teams last. For the first four, put them absolutely last. Why not? All right, let's get to Selection Sunday in terms of the teams that are getting in. I do think that Duke has a chance to win the whole thing, especially because they have Zion back. It's a top-heavy team. He's a unique player. They don't shoot it great. They don't have much depth. And they're very, very young at most of their key spots. But they're super talented. And this is not a crazy talented college basketball season where there's other teams. On the other hand, I'd love to see a matchup with Kentucky and see the improvement in this Kentucky squad that's kind of figured themselves out. I put Kentucky and Duke right there with Tennessee and Gonzaga and Virginia as the teams. You know, all those are the teams. And I actually think Michigan, more than Michigan State, has a chance to get to the Final Four. We're going to do this next week as well. Just thinking about this, doing my radio show, which you can catch every day, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, or, you know, follow me on Twitter. We'll tweet out where and how you can get the radio show. I was thinking about my four different NCAA tournament appearances. First year, Notre Dame. We were 9-18. We were done on, it was the first year of the expanded Big East, our first year in the Big East. We played Syracuse the last day of the season, senior day we played Syracuse, in Syracuse, New York. We led by 15 at the half. We led by 6 with a minute to go and had the ball and lost. And then I feel like, and I don't remember the game as vividly because it really happened quickly, we led in the first half against Syracuse in the Big East tournament. We played them in the first game. And this was a Syracuse team that played for a national championship. We had them dead to rights beat on senior day. They went and played for a national championship like a month later in East Rutherford against Kentucky. Crazy. Lazarus Sims, Otis Hill, Jeff Chipola, and of course, J-Dub John Wallace, right? Remember that? Remember the games in Denver? The game against Georgia was nutty. But it's like four different lives playing 4 different years of college basketball. Playing college basketball, but having your season be over on Thursday, the first time that the Big East tournament started on a Thursday, I believe. Maybe it was Wednesday, but I think it was Thursday. I remember walking around New York City after the game, because we played the very first game, and we were done at like 2 o'clock, and like, you know, 3:30, we're in Times Square, we're walking around with our Notre Dame sweats on, like, oh, hey, Notre Dame, you're in the Big East now. Hey, what time you guys play tomorrow? Like, nah, we're actually done. We're going home. We did have spring break, and that spring break coincided with the Final Four, and got tickets, And I think we sold them. I think we got, that was the last year in the arena. The last time they've had a Final Four in arena. I think my dad had two tickets and he paid for all of our trips. My brother, my sister, me and my dad paid for all of our different trips because he had two tickets and he sold them. And we watched it from Jim Ornstein's a famous agent now. His dad was a fraternity brother's of my dad. My dad went to Syracuse for a year. And anyway, like all this stuff, my dad is not alive anymore, so I can tell his secret story. Like, he went to Syracuse for a year and rushed a fraternity, and then I'm not sure he ever told anybody Ohio State. And I don't know if he rushed a different fraternity. Like, one was Sammy and one was, I don't remember the two of them. Anyway, so Jim and Gus Ornstein's dad was his fraternity brother. They were still friends, and so we watched the games at a bar. But it's weird to, like, say, like, you're playing college basketball, you're not a part of the NCAA. It's like you're not a part of the sport. And then, you know, fast forward 2 years later, I remember we were a surprise team to win the Big 12 South, but we played a very soft schedule, and then we lost our first Big 12 tournament game against Texas. It was Tom Pender's last win as a Texas head coach. Came back, and we got a terrible seed, got an 8 seed. And I just remember, like, we got an 8 seed, and we played George Washington, and then the bracket comes up, and we're playing Duke, and all of a sudden the air was, like, let out of the balloon. Turns out, I mean, Duke was, they were okay that year. That was the year before, a couple years before they won the national championship. A year before they went to the Final Four. They had Battier. They had Brand. They had Chris Burgess. Rashawn McLeod kicked our ass. That was it in Kentucky. And the game was tied with 2.5 to go. And I'm dribbling up the court. And Eddie Sutton stands up and he's doing this thing with his hands, like almost like spreading his wings. And I was like, I don't know what play you're calling. So I just did the old 20-second call to timeout. Well, it turns out he was just telling us to spread out, but I couldn't hear him because it was so loud in the arena. And it was also our last timeout. I did not get a technical foul. I didn't Chris Webber it. Anyway, we ran a play called Cowboy Fade. It's one that you can see Michigan State run. You put your two posts out wide, put your two guards out top, put me in the middle, hit me at the top of the key, and you set two flare screens. And we ran it for Adrian Peterson. He caught it, and instead of shooting the jump shot because the man trailed him, he smartly drove into the basket, and I thought he was fouled, but I don't know. He missed a drive. They come down, get a bucket. We come down, miss a shot. They come down, get a bucket, another Rashawn McLeod, and we end up losing by 6 points. But it was tied with 2 minutes to go, and we almost beat Duke. And almost beating Duke at that time was so big that when we got back to Stillwater, we were like local legends, local heroes. St. Patrick's Day was the next Tuesday, and all of us split on classes and drank green beer and ate great eggs and ham. It was amazing. All right, so that's my first NCAA tournament experience. That was in Lexington, Kentucky. Of course, Eddie Sutton had been the head coach there. It didn't end well, so we had like police escorts everywhere we went. We stayed at like a double tree that had big tubs. The memories I have are really interesting. Yeah, so I mean, like, look, anybody who's played in the tournament, I would guess you remember so many moments vividly, right? And I remember that the first tournament we played in, we won one of the first games of the tournament against George Washington. I actually think that's the best. The best is to win on the early games on Thursday, because then everybody else is playing. You get to watch all these other games. You're kind of like, and you keep watching your highlights and Oklahoma State beats George Washington, blah, blah, blah. You remember those moments. So what we'll do next week on the pod, I'll have a bunch of different guests on and we'll tell like our favorite NCAA tournament stories. I have other stories from even the first year. I'll leave with this. I don't feel like it's a huge controversial year, but I do think it's a year in which the committee, you have to look at every different number and make the case for every different team. Like, look, if you want to make a case for the high majors and the Indianas to get in, fine. But you lose 16 games. You lose 12 out of 15 at one point. Are you really an NCAA tournament team? And why not, on some level, reward, even if it's an inferior roster, one that you're not sure in a neutral site if they'd actually win the game? Why not reward Belmont, Furman, UNC Greensboro, multiple teams? That's what the first four is designed for. Our first guest is Bobby Regan, covers college hoops, NBA draft, the NBA, and as he writes it, other shenanigans at Barstool Sports. He's a lefty, so kind of like him. Means he probably has a better looking jump shot than I do. He joins us from his couch or his sofa or his big man chair in his man cave.
All right, so Bobby, I guess here's my first question to you. What do you think is the most interesting part of college basketball heading into Selection Sunday?
I think there's two. It's the race for the one seeds because, let's be honest, Blue Bloods, as much as we love upsets, Blue Bloods late in NCAA tournament is what matters. So whether it's, you know, you're talking about the ultimate Blue Bloods in Duke, Kentucky, and UNC battling for, what, 2-1 seeds probably? And then on the flip side, the debate of mid-majors getting in versus, you know, 500 or sub-500 conference record teams for major conferences. So I think those are the two most interesting ones. I'll probably go with the top half just because, I mean, let's be honest, they're the championship-type caliber teams, and that's always a little bit more interesting.
Let's start at the back end of it because, like, look, this is going to drop tomorrow morning, which is Friday morning, and all of those Blue Bloods will likely still be playing, and so we don't have kind of clarity on where they stand. But of the low and mid majors who have lost and are needing a flyer to get in, and I call this the "What the fuck is Tulsa doing in my bracket?" From a couple years ago.
Oh yeah,
I never forget. Like I was in the set of CBS, and the way it worked was we would go over to the CBS Sports Network studio, and they had a show going like the whole time while the Big Ten game was being played. And so we'd pop in, and then meanwhile you had two packs, you had two microphones, you had two ear packs, whatever. And they would switch you over, and right before the show, literally right before the show, they'd hand you a bracket, and you kind of have like 5 minutes to figure it out before you
right.
know. And then you'd look and you'd say, all right, you know, the South is coming up first, or whatever. And you're just kind of scanning for who's missing and who's in the bracket. And I'll never forget, I think it was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, right, where they Tulsa popped up, and they weren't even really on most people's radar as a bubble team. And I was like, what the fuck is Tulsa doing in this bracket? I remember saying it out loud. They're like, dude, you got a microphone on. It's not hot, but you got to be careful. Anyway, so who's the team that if you were going to stick, Bobby Regan's going to stick his flag in and go like, hey, here's the team I believe in and they should be in. Who is it?
Belmont. That's the team that I'll stick my stake in from the mid-majors. They got to sweep over Lipscomb, which I think is a key component when you're arguing these teams. And then, you know, the win at UCLA doesn't look as great now, but it's still a win at UCLA. I'll go Belmont for the team. I'll stick my stake in of if they end up, whether it's in Dayton, the first four or not, I would be completely cool with it. From the majors, I don't know. I guess Indiana.
Why Indiana?
Their wins. I think, you know, everyone points to the losses, but wins matter too. And they have some of the best wins in the country, especially when you talk about sweeping Michigan State, who, you know, 2 days from now we could be talking as a one seed.
My issue with Indiana is they were consistently bad, right? Like,
yeah.
anybody can have a bad day or
a bad 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe this is classically unfair, but they very easily could have lost both of those Michigan State games, very easily could have lost the Wisconsin game at home. And so I sit there and go, like, I get that they have good wins in November, but man, I'm just struggling with the why were they so bad for so long if they're really a good team, right? Like, if you're a really good team and you have an injury, and they had an injury, but if you have a bad night or a bad two games or a bad road swing, like they had bad home losses. And the problem with the, like, look, the Big Ten is super smart. Those guys are brilliant. They basically they've done to this system what the Valley did 10 years ago, which is, you know, expand the number of conference games. And when your conference teams pick up good wins and they're like, you know, the quad one becomes top 75, which is a very flimsy argument for who's really any good. But regardless,
right.
Because they've had a good year, like, it doesn't look as bad when you lose to Northwestern. Northwestern sucks this year. I'm sorry. They're just not a good team. When they played Ohio State wasn't good, and they lost at home. And then they got pummeled by Minnesota on the road. So I struggle with Indiana unless they make a Big Ten tournament run. Let me get back to the Belmont thing. I think it's fascinating. Yep. Obviously, they lost their conference tournament championship. I have no problem with Belmont, if Lipscomb, if any of these teams. get in. But I think one of the things we undersell, or when I've been on TV on that big show, we don't get time to sell, is how difficult winning at UCLA in a guarantee game is. Right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
People don't understand, like, winning a bye game in college basketball is really, really, really hard. You go out there, they pick the refs, they pick the game time, they give you a check, and sometimes they give you hotel rooms, and no one has any expectations of them winning that, of you winning that game, and they did so. I almost give that like a win and a half when that happens.
To me, it makes up for the Green Bay loss.
Okay.
Like the Green Bay loss, even though on the road is bad, the win at UCLA should make up for that to me. And then you have the sweep of Lipscomb, which I think is one of the more impressive things when we talk about bubble teams is you just sweep another bubble team, home and away. That should, you know, that counts for something to me. And then you look at what they did in the conference. I mean, they had, what, two conference losses in the regular season? They got swept by Jacksonville State, make it to the finals and lose, you know, what was a close game to Murray State. Like, to me, that's enough. And I know eye test isn't a thing. They looked the part. They looked the part of one of the 36 best teams for an at-large.
Well, and here's the other thing that goes for them as opposed to an Indiana is, like, look, I understand we can use the metrics of how many current top 50 wins you would have. And Indiana has some incredible, like Lipscomb, by the way, has one win. But Belmont is 3-2 as opposed to Indiana's 6-8 versus the current top 50. But even if you factor in that metric, you factor in your quad one record as well. You put all this stuff together. The computer, the net rating has said that Belmont, they believe, is better than Indiana. Right.
Sure.
So, well, it frustrates me that we did this with RPI, where we would take little pieces of the RPI and say, we don't like the overall RPI, but we like this number from the RPI. And we're kind of doing the same thing with the net. We're like, look, if we think the net rating actually spits out the teams and how they should be ranked, then why are we dismissing Furman's 41? Right. And I would say one of the things working against Furman is the Nova team they beat is not the Nova team that's winning in the Big East tournament. Right. It's a little bit.
And the Loyola. Everyone talked about that win at Loyola, and well, Loyola was a very average team.
Right, right. Okay, let's get to the top of the bracket. Give me your pool of teams you think can win a national championship.
Virginia, UNC, Duke, as long as Zion's healthy, Gonzaga, Kentucky, Texas Tech, and that's it.
Tennessee can't win it?
I don't think so.
Michigan State, go ahead.
I think they are very good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I don't want to knock Tennessee too much. I think they're Final Four caliber. I think we've seen the peak of Tennessee. I think we know who they are. Whereas the other schools, I think, have still a little bit more of a peak. They have that kind of top end talent that you look for. Grant Williams, Admiral Schofield, both really, really good. But go look. You know, you look at national champions. You have to have kind of top end pro talent on the roster. They're the one school that doesn't really have that. You're talking about back-end first-round picks.
Yeah, I would also say, though, that wasn't that really what Villanova had? Like the Villanova guys were all overdrafted because of how good a team they were.
Like, but they had seven of them, at least.
They had seven?
Then they had...
They had four, I thought. They had Bridges. Bridges was the top guy. DiVincenzo. Spellman snuck in.
Oh, you're talking last year. Sorry, I thought you were talking the first year.
Yeah, but even those guys, even that team, right? like Josh Hart was overdrafted because of the culture of the place. Like, he's a nice player. Like, he should have been a mid second round draft pick, and that's one of the reasons I think Zion Williamson should and is in fact playing. Why all these guys should play is because what we see last and what we see you do in the NCAA tournament forever shapes who we. And Torian Green, remember, was drafted in the NBA. He wasn't an NBA player, but he was part of back to back national championship team. So my point is. I think that their value. Whereas I look at Tennessee, and I think they're. I agree. My thing is more like, look, Rick has not been a good tournament coach.
Right. Well, they're the worst defensive team out of that bunch.
Yeah, which is really stunning because you have older players and you have Rick Barnes. You think they would be rugged and tough defensively, and they're actually not.
Yeah, I know they looked really good defensively against Kentucky and Mississippi State back to back, but the rest of the season says you can go score on them if you want.
Okay, so give me one outlier that could be a Final Four team. I have my one. I love your Texas Tech pick, by the way. I do, in fact, believe. I'm not sure their guards are good enough to make plays, but defensively and Culliver and coaching, I would say they're
shoot so well now too.
Yes, so I'm with you. if you were going to have an outlier Final Four team, who would it be? I have like two or three to pick from, but go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I'm, you know, I think Florida State's a possibility there.
Leonard Hamilton?
I know they were close last year. They've quietly put together a really good season.
No, no, no. They're one of these teams that you watch them walk through the airport and go through layup lines, and at times in a game, they look the part, no question.
But I think people kind of dismiss them when they lost those three games in a row because you lose back-to-back to Pitt and Boston College. Then you're, you know, I mean, let's be honest, you're Florida State. You're not, you're one of the least strong ACC teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that defense is good enough. The question is, can they hit enough shots?
Yes.
But I think they're one of the 16 best teams in the country. So if we're going to go, you know, kind of somewhere like that, I'll take Florida State as my quote outlier.
All right. I got two for you, and feel free to dismantle them. They're more, one's a mid-major, one's kind of, yeah, both kind of mid-majors. I still believe in Nevada and Buffalo. Those are the two.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I completely agree with both.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm watching Buffalo play today against Akron, and I've seen Akron play. And I called their games in the Cayman, so I saw them play three times. And I was like, they're not bad. And now, look, they haven't had a great year, and they've kind of moved lineups. But they got older kids, and Buffalo just kicked the hell out of them. And I'm like, dude, what are we doing? Because this is what we do. Like, a Buffalo team drops a stinker, and you're like, oh, they're not any good. Indiana, right. Michigan, you know, Michigan drops a stinker. You're like, well, Michigan had a bad shooting night. Like, you know, or they're a Big Ten team. Like, you lose to a crummy team, you lose to a crummy team. Buffalo is really good defensively. Older, Massenburg's a stud. They've shown the ability to win the NCAA tournament. They're not going to be scared. I think they'll get a pretty good seed and a pretty good draw. And then the other one's Nevada, who they have some stinkers as well, and they don't shoot it great.
I think they're just bored during the regular season.
Correct. I kind of think there's a little Golden State Warriors to them.
Yeah, well, you talk about their, what, 7-8 guys that are 22, 23 years old?
Yes.
Senior?
Yes.
They know how good they are?
Yes.
I mean, how hyped can you get for a game at Air Force? Or, you know, games like that where we know we're the best team in the conference. We know we're one of the 15 best teams in the country. Let's just wait for the Mountain West tournament and then NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
You know, just do enough to be comfortable, get a top 5 seed, and then go from there.
Who do you think gets the UCLA job?
I have no idea. I've said it a couple times. It's the most fascinating coaching search I can remember, because you're talking about a big time program like UCLA. Every other time a big time program has opened up, we knew who was going to get hired. Like, everybody knew Chris Mack was going to Louisville. Everyone assumed like John Calipari was linked to Kentucky. It's wide open. And the fact that we're going about 6 months until it's probably going to be hired, so, you know, I guess 4 months, 5 months. I don't know. Like, is Matt Painter an option? Because I wouldn't be surprised with that.
I find it would be just weird to bring out another Midwestern guy,
yeah,
and
yeah,
put him in that chair, right? And I think Paint's great, and I think he could build the type of culture where they would win and win for a long time. Like, I'm not dismissing Paint, and obviously, you know, John Wooden's a former Purdue coach. You know, I mean, he's the exact same, but you had Steve Alford, who granted came from New Mexico, but I don't know if that same thing works again. I think it would be a great hire and it'd be interesting, but I don't know if that's what UCLA's into. Like, because they finally spent some money on football, people are convinced they're going to spend money on basketball, which means it puts them in the, hey, we'll throw a bunch of money and do whatever Tony Bennett wants. But I don't think Tony Bennett takes it. And I don't think
Bennett leaves either.
I think they need Bill Self. I think that's the guy. But I don't
Self,
know.
That'd be an interesting one. I mean, if we're talking, you know, like Vegas favorites, is Walton the Vegas favorite or an Edney or someone like that has ties to UCLA?
Well, Earl Watson would be the ties. I don't know. Edney getting passed over to be the interim, I thought was kind of a dirty deal. I mean, I don't understand why you don't give that guy the job. But they never even talked to him about it. Earl is kind of like the recent players people's champ, right? They love the guy. I don't see the Walton thing outside of Bill and the old guard, you know, wanting that name and attachment, just because I don't think he's into college basketball at all. I don't think that's his jam. People forget during the lockout, he spent time with Memphis. I don't think he loved it. And I think he really likes the NBA, and I think he thinks getting another NBA gig. And like guys that have legit coached in the NBA and have a future in the NBA, they don't dig the college thing. They just don't. They don't want to recruit. You know, when they're off, they're off. And, you know, they just want to coach ball. They don't want to do all that other stuff. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if he's going to take a college job, I'm sure he'd prefer Arizona as opposed to UCLA, which also might become open.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember a job opening like UCLA where it's this. There's so many different names linked to it with no one really having a true idea of who feels like the real favorite, I guess, for
yeah.
the job.
No,
every other big job's had that.
It's a great point you make where I live here. Okay. I know people and no one, everybody says, well, Tony Bennett, cause that's kind of what's been leaked. And what do you think about Wojo and all of these other guys? All right. A couple other things I want to get to, and I'll let you get back to watching the games. Cause I know you're spending 13 hours in the same chair, which is, which I'm totally jealous of. Give me the big name team that will not be in the Field of 68 that people will be surprised by.
Probably Clemson, but I don't know if that would surprise anybody. You know, I think Oklahoma's fine. I'm trying to think of people that have already lost.
I don't understand. The Oklahoma thing, I mean, I know they beat Kansas, but God, they've been awful.
Yeah, I know. But again, like...
And a second straight year of being bad down the stretch.
It's weird. It's weird that they can't just get over, like, that February hump. I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's any true surprise. Maybe Florida.
Yeah.
Florida really hasn't done anything, but I know the models kind of like them.
Okay. Give me the player who we're going to... Give me the Ali Farouk Manesh of the first week.
Oh, that's a great one. I'm trying to think, like, who's a little off the radar. Obviously, everyone will say Fletcher McGee. We got to take him out. I think we got to take him out.
Do we? I mean, I think you and I do,
yeah,
and us college
true.
Basketball guys do, but this is what I explain to people. You know, look, I worked for 10 years at ESPN, and I thought everybody knew that I covered college basketball. And then I'd work on one Selection Sunday and one NCAA tournament show, and they're like, hey, you know, you're pretty good at doing games in this basketball thing, you know? I'm like, yeah, I've been doing it a while. There's just a complete, there's a whole population of people that don't watch anything until the tournament.
I think it's going to be, then it has to be Fletcher McGee. He's the one guy that can go get 40 in a game. And I think it's a real possibility he might, depending where their matchup is.
Okay, that's a good one. What happens with Will Wade at LSU? Any chance he coaches again there?
I'll tell you what, it doesn't sound like that. With everything that's come out today, with the statements from both him and, you know, the lawyers and everything, he wants to coach, but LSU seems, Joe Oliva seems very dead set on just not letting him until something happens. And right now, as of this date, they're on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. So I tend to think he's not going to end up coaching this year.
All right. Give me Zion. Who's your National Player of the Year?
Zion.
Zion's your National Player of the Year. Even missing that many games?
I think if anything, that further strengthened his case. Look at what Duke looked like without him.
Yeah. What happened to Marquette?
I don't know. Is their defense really as average as we thought it was all year? Or I guess above average? Because that was the question coming into the year.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, you have three dudes who athletically struggle. Right, like the Housers have great basketball IQs, have big bodies, but in terms of lateral foot movement, not great. And then Marcus Howard's a non-defender as well.
And they don't have a backup point guard.
And they don't have a backup. They don't have a backup point guard. Like I have long said that, you know, that if they had the kid sitting out, what's his name from Utah State? The transfer from Utah State, Kobe McEwen. Then when they have Kobe, if he was eligible this year, like that's a team that could win the whole thing. I think they're a guard short.
Not only that, but Howard's a little turnover prone, and he has to be your lead ball handler.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't have him one guy, and I'm with you. But it is funny how like they kind of took the Big East by storm, and then all of a sudden petered out, and everybody's forgotten about them nationally. Even us now, not talking about. I do think they're a team that can make a run in the tournament, just because. You have three dudes that can absolutely light it up, spread you way out. Like you, I remember getting ready for NCAA tournaments, and you're watching highlight clips of teams. I'm thinking of watching highlight clips, and you know, Marcus Howard, you're watching and studying, and then you're watching these two big boys, you know, hit NBA threes and hit, you know, post up shots, and And then they have.
Well, they never feel out of a game just because of how quick they can score.
Yeah, yeah. And look, defense. If you look at the top defensive teams, they usually survive the first game and sometimes the first weekend. But teams that make a run to the NCAA tournament out of that second weekend, it's ones that can make shots. Like, you got to have multiple shot makers, and they absolutely.
UConn won a title doing that. They were very average defensively the Napier year.
Yeah, and obviously Napier took over, and there's some similarities to Napier to a guy. Do you think Marcus Howard comes back for a senior year?
I go back and forth. I think he might, because I don't know where he's going to be graded at this year, and I think he can, similar to Shamori Ponds, where it was, well, what can he do to get better? Okay, well, he can be more efficient, and Ponds became more efficient this year. I think Howard can come back and be, you know, hey, I can take care of the ball a bit more and be a true combo guard at the next level. Like you said, with McEwen coming over, you can run more sets with him off the ball, with Howard off the ball, you know, lower that turnover percentage, you know, limit, no, I shouldn't say limit touches, but limit, you know, ball handling touches within the domain ball handler, and show, I guess, kind of his strengths more than his weaknesses.
Yeah, I guess my thing is, and I think this is what they'll tell him, look, you're a second-round pick if you come out this year, you're a second-round pick if you come out next year. The only difference is, you know, again, and this is if they don't make a run. Like, if they make a run, I think you go because you'll probably be a first-round draft pick, but, if you know, make a run to the Final Four. But if you don't, like, come back, and worst-case scenario, you're a second-round pick, and you set every career scoring mark in Marquette history, and, you know, you know, you left high school a year early. Why not kind of come out at a normal age? He turns 20 after the season, I think after the school year as well.
I think if they lose first weekend, he's back. If they make second weekend, he's gone.
Pretty good. When's your next pod dropping?
Right now it's on hold, so I'm just writing right now. We're doing a little things a little different over at Barstool, so you can just keep following me or keep reading the site, and I'm on there.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to having you on my radio show as well this upcoming week, getting ready for the NCAA tournament. Love your work, and I love the fact that you are not moving, so hopefully you did not move during this interview. Appreciate your time.
I did not. I adjusted my leg.
Where are you watching next week?
I'll be at my house. I love it. I'm in my basement with my beer fridge and my multiple TVs. There's no reason to move.
What beer?
Whatever my friends bring over, that's the rule. You guys can all come over here. I have everything set up. I'll order the food. You guys just bring the beer, so I don't have to leave.
Awesome. Thanks so much, dude.
All right, have a good one.
My next guest is Brian Snow. B. Snow, as he's known, is a recruiting analyst, but also loves the college game. Thought you'd love to hear his opinions on all things college hoop. All right, let's welcome in my man B. Snow as he joins us. Of course, he's a recruiting analyst for 24/7 Sports. He lives in Indy, which is the heart of all things hoop. Let's start with this. Does Indiana basketball deserve a spot in the field of 68?
As it stands this moment in time, I don't think you can say yes, but, you know, keep winning, find a way to win, you know, maybe. But I would say no right now. They played a hard schedule, but the way they played down the stretch, it's tough to justify it. That said, the golden rule of the NCAA tournament is you have to take 68 teams.
Yeah.
So that's become a problem this year.
Let me just ask you this. Okay, so again, at the time of this recording, they're losing by 13 with 9:40 to go in the second half. Okay, so let's assume we'll edit that part out. Okay, so let's assume right now for the next 2 minutes that they've lost this game. So you lose to Ohio State in a must-win game. Okay? You lose to Ohio State. And so you end up, like, we can point out their wins, and they're really good wins, but you end up essentially 8-13 in Big Ten play. 8-13, and as much as you could sit there and go, like, well, they had won 4 in a row, like, okay, but they had lost 5 in a row before, you know, or lost, what was it, like 11 out of 12 before they won 4 in a row. And so then you lose to Ohio State, who's a borderline team at best in their own right. I struggle with they had two miraculous wins at home over Wisconsin and Michigan State late, and the road win over Michigan State was a big one. I'm not trying to diminish it, but if you look at the whole of their season, who they are in the tournament, like, that doesn't feel like a tournament team to me.
Yeah, I would say 17 and 15 isn't good enough to get into the tournament. I think you need a little bit more substance than that. Now, they probably have the best wins of anybody on the bubble, mm-hmm. but at some point in time, you got to be a little bit more consistent. You can't lose to Northwestern.
So you can't lose some
of the games they've lost.
Yeah, or you lose a couple to Ohio State. So if you were going to take them out, because this is the thing, there's 68 teams. You point out it's hard to get them all in. And you're going to put one of these non-name brand teams in. We're talking UNC Greensboro and Belmont and Furman and I'm sure I'm missing somebody right now. Maybe UC Irvine doesn't win the Big West tournament. I think they get in if they don't. Who do you put in ahead of Indiana of those non-name brand mid-major, low-major?
For me, it might be Greensboro. Just because all their losses have been good. And I'm someone who tends to value good wins over bad losses. So yep. That's why I struggle with that versus, say, Furman, which did go to Villanova and win. But I think Greensboro kind of earned it. I'm not trying to hear any arguments on Belmont. I'll be completely honest with you. I'm just not listening to them.
Yeah. Here's an interesting one on Furman, right? So we would both agree that when they played Villanova, Villanova was probably not as good a team as they are now, right? Is that fair?
Yeah.
I mean, okay. It could stand a reason that Furman might actually be better as well. Like, it's funny, we only look at one team and say they're the only team that's gotten better. But it also, I'm always fascinated, we don't use that same argument for Indiana goes and beats Marquette on the road. I don't know if it was on the road. They beat Marquette early this season.
It was at Assembly.
Okay, so it was at home. They beat the hell out of Marquette. But why is it that only Furman playing Nova, only that Villanova team is better and improved because they lost four guys in the NBA draft. But they're the only team that's gotten better of all three of those teams.
Yeah, that's where it gets interesting. And I think you can parse any part of a schedule. And that's why I kind of want to take the whole and what overall. And that's why I point to Greensboro, because I look at Belmont. They lost to Jacksonville State twice.
Yep.
And why did they lose to Jacksonville State? Because they couldn't match athleticism. Well, who are they going to be playing in the NCAA tournament? Athletic teams. So I look at that, I say, it's just a fundamental problem with them. So I'm not really trying to hear Belmont. They have nothing to back it up. So I would probably lean Greensboro if I had to take one of those teams who we've kind of lumped everybody into mid-major. I would say some of those teams are actually low-major.
Yep.
But
I agree.
If I'm taking one of those lower level teams, I think I'm leaving Greensboro.
Who gets the UCLA job?
That's a heck of a question.
Okay, let me ask you this. Maybe this. Since nobody seems to know, right? I put Brian Snow, you've been doing this a long time. You know, everybody in the sport. The realities of how much people make, who would actually, if you are going to give me your wish list of three guys that you think you could offer to and would probably take it, if you were Guerrero, if you were in charge of the deal, who would be the calls?
My first call would probably be Chris Beard. I know some might look at it not a great personality fit in L.A., but I think he's good enough, and I think he would let his guys be dudes just enough to keep people happy. That'd probably be my first call. If I could find a way to get Matt Painter, I would. I don't think Matt would leave, but if Matt would go, I like him in that role. Then, you know, Fred Hoiberg makes some sense. You know, it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but he would have to get the right assistance, that's for sure, because Fred's not a big fan of recruiting. But if he could get some assistance that'll do what he does, and Fred can, the best thing he does is manage egos, and as you know, Doug, out in L.A., that can be a big thing.
Well, that's
so
the big.
I kind of like Fred Hoiberg.
That's the big thing with coaching at UCLA is it's not just managing egos. You got to pick the right kids in L.A. Like it's a different deal out here where, you know, I know coaches in the Pac-12. They're like, why'd that team fall apart? Too many L.A. kids. You know, just too many LA. You got to get kids from, you know, even if you get Inland Empire kids or you get kids from NorCal, from Sacramento, from Vegas, from Arizona, they're just wired different than LA kids that, you know, everybody's got clothing line and Instagram account. They got, and there's the conflicting alliances of the different AAU programs as well. LA is a different deal. And I wonder if Fred, who kind of always carries himself as above it, would be a good fit. Or it could be a complete disaster because he doesn't really engage with the players. I think Beard would be great. I don't know. I would guess that I'm be interested to see what Texas does. You know, he's a Texas alum, and I know they're in the same league, but there's no way that they sit there and go like, hey, we're cool with the Texas alum winning our league at Texas Tech and then going to UCLA. I feel like Texas, at some point, the ego of those donors is like, yeah, we're gonna make him an offer and then, you know, try and find a soft landing for Shaka.
That's what's interesting. And, you know, you're going to have, if Buzz leaves Virginia Tech, you know, that's a natural spot for Shaka to get a soft landing. If Wake moves on from Danny Manning, maybe they can find a soft landing. And I think it probably, I don't know that Shaka would be totally against that either, if we're being totally honest.
Yes.
So that's what's going to be interesting to watch is how these dominoes go down, when they start going down. Doug, the other thing I would say about the UCLA job, as you know, and I think where Fred might be good, is so much of it is keeping agents at an arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred, with his NBA experience and his ties to agents, might be able to do that because every agent lives in that area of L.A. It's wild to think about. But that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah, it could also be interesting, though. He's a Wasserman guy, and Wasserman's kind of complete control over the thing if he hires the coach and he's a Wasserman client. That part is super interesting. All right, who are your pool of teams that you could see win the whole thing?
I think you got to, assuming Zion's a healthy human being, I think you got to start with Duke. I'm still, even though I'm not, I can guarantee you I won't pick them. Virginia has to be there. Gonzaga, definitely, even though Josh Perkins brought every fear I have of Josh Perkins out against St. Mary's.
Meaning what for people who haven't seen Josh Perkins play?
When it goes bad, it goes horribly. Horribly bad, and it can do so in a hurry. And he can struggle with pressure sometimes. Not pressure like, oh my God, this is a big game, but actual
No. Like on ball pressure. Yes, and look, St. Mary's, I thought, had a great game plan. Randy did an amazing job, but those aren't elite, crazy level athletes like he's going to see at the top of college basketball, right? Like, you know, I mean,
I just love their front court, so I'm not going to count them out.
I'm not either, but it is interesting that they've always had a good front court, but Gonzaga has made its mark by, one, having good athletes in the front court, but, you know, all their early teams, it was all backcourt dominant, you know, backcourt, like, you know, from Santangelo to Dickow to Step to and Pargo somewhere in there as well, Rivio and you know, Pangos as well. Although a lot of those guys, they were limited athletically, they were great shooters, big shot makers, and exceptional passers as well, and really, really tough. Perkins feels like the least true point guard worthy of those guys, of the runs. It does feel like a fundamental flaw. But look, I think Tennessee might have that fundamental flaw as well. Okay, so you put Duke, you put Gonzaga. Who are the other teams?
You know, Virginia, the way they played, even though I don't love their talent, North Carolina, because of the way they're playing.
Yep.
And it seems like they can always have an answer. And when you can score, you have a chance to win it. And then I would say Tennessee and Kentucky. I would say it's going to be from that group. I don't necessarily love any team. Like, I don't look at any team and see a Villanova from last year where I was like, that is the best team in the country.
Yes.
Period.
Yes. Yes. Last year was very very, very easy. Okay. So outside of that group, give me a team that Brian Snow says, I wouldn't be stunned to see them in the Final Four.
Certainly Texas Tech. You know, they've got experience winning in March. You got a dude in Jared Culver. You got a lottery pick.
Yep.
So I would point to Texas Tech as one of those teams. And then this is going to sound insane because they're playing terrible right now, but Marquette, because
they can make
shots.
You
have a guy who can go for 50,
and they have two other guys that can rise up and shoot. They got a rim protector. Mm-hmm. I've said if Kobe McEwen was eligible, I think they could win the whole thing.
Yeah. So I look at Marquette and I say, hey, you know, if they catch fire, you know, that's a team that. They've kind of got some of the markers of a team that's gone far in the past.
I have two teams that I'm infatuated with, Nevada and Buffalo. I feel like Nevada gets bored. They got 23-year-old guys. They got Jordan Caroline, who's an absolute monster. They don't shoot it great. And we do look at Sweet 16 last year and assume that they were great. They had to have two miraculous comebacks just to make the Sweet 16. But I like Nevada, and I really like Buffalo. Really, really, really like Buffalo. Tell me I'm crazy.
They're old and talented.
Yeah.
Old, talented, and they got some shot makers. So, yeah, Buffalo, I just wonder if they can stand up physically up front. But, again, old, they got shot makers, and they play hard. Mm-hmm. And that's a heck of a combination.
It is not a bad combination. All right, give me. I got a couple teams that I think were bound to. They just don't seem like they're as good as reputation. I would say Kansas and Louisville are the two teams. Like Louisville's ranked 21, but it's like we're kind of not paying. They have one true ball handler, and he's really a low mid major. I mean, he's Christian's been outstanding for them, but he's not a great. And like you talk about a guy who's not great under pressure. Look what happened against that Duke press. Christian Cunningham just kind of wilted. I feel like they had the big win against. They have a couple big wins, but in totality, they're a surprising team because Chris Mack is an awesome coach. And I think Kansas and Louisville are teams that wouldn't stun me if they lost the first game.
The two, you took one of mine in Kansas because they're terrible away from fog right now.
Yep.
Like, just awful. And then Virginia Tech, because they're not the same without Justin Robinson.
Yep.
And even if Justin Robinson comes back, he's not going to be Justin Robinson. I mean, he's been out, a month now?
Mm-hmm.
You don't just step in and start playing basketball again and be the same guy. So I wonder if Virginia Tech really has it in them to make a run. And I also think if Justin does come back, you kind of got the Kyrie Irving thing when he came back for Duke. Like,
yep.
These guys are now used to playing without him. And now the guy who's going to handle the ball all the time is coming into the mix.
And you have
That's a hard adjustment.
And you have the Buzz thing, which we all think Buzz is getting the A&M job, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like worst kept secret ever.
Yeah, it's been a worst kept secret for like 18 months.
Yeah, that Billy's not going to get fired. He's going to somehow do something else within the university system. Of course, he's been fighting Parkinson's really since he got the job, and everybody likes BK. But the thing is not going right, not going in the right direction. And you know, Buzz has always wanted to get back to Texas, and they have gobs and gobs of money, and it takes gobs and gobs of money to get him out of Virginia Tech, right?
Yeah, and the other thing is I don't see Kelvin Sampson leaving for A&M. I don't know if they'd hire him, but I don't think he would go to A&M. So if Kelvin's not going to be the guy, that kind of leaves Buzz. And Buzz is he's a different dude, but
yep.
He's a very smart dude. One, he knows he can wear on people.
Yep.
And he doesn't like to stay somewhere too long because of that.
Yep.
And then two, he also knows if you stay somewhere too long, you want to be one step ahead of the posse because once you lose people, you never get them back.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it at Marquette, and I could see him wanting to do it at Virginia Tech as well.
All right, what about Arkansas? Does that come open?
Yeah, I've heard yes, I've heard no. You put a gun to my head, I would probably guess yes. But, that's a tough one because there's so much, Mike Anderson's such like the Arkansas guy.
Mm-hmm.
And while he hasn't had great success, he hasn't had great failures either. So that one's going to be interesting.
I tend to agree with you. Your National Player of the Year is who?
I still lean towards Zion Williamson, but I'm stuck. I might go Cassius Winston because he's taking a team that honestly is not talented at all.
Yeah.
Without Nick Ward and Josh Langford.
Yeah.
And they won the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Now they shared it, but they still won it. And Cassius Winston has controlled everything on the court for them.
Yeah, and then the two wins, and even though they lost Indiana twice, the two wins over Michigan, you're going against arguably the best defensive point guard in the country, and so look, I know everything he does off a ball screen, but it's one thing to win big games in the conference against inferior competition. You're playing against an absolute dynamic defensive player, and he's won both those matchups personally and with his team. I don't hate that pick. I don't hate that pick at all. Who's the big name team that will not hear their name called on Selection Sunday?
Big name team that I think there's a bunch of them. I mean, obviously, I would say Indiana's probably the most obvious answer, and then I still think NC State. I don't think the win over Clemson's enough. So I think that's another one that's not going to hear their name called.
I tend to agree with you. I've gone off on this podcast over strength of schedule and why that ranking doesn't make any sense. But I do think when you have the worst non-conference strength of schedule, when it's the worst, committee members get locked onto things and they can't get off of them. I think that's one that they get locked onto. All right, we'll let you get back to watching your ball. Again, make sure you can follow B. Snow for all your recruiting information and hoop commentary. He knows these guys back, forth, in between. Tell all your friends about him at B. Snow 247. Brian, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the hoops.
Appreciate it, Doug.
All right, hope you enjoyed All Ball. My thanks to our guests. Make sure you subscribe, download, and listen. We'll preview the entire NCAA tournament, all the storylines from basketball next week. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.